जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो गोपी जन दुर्लभ गिरिवर जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी ईश्वर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना ईश्वरानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यामुन तीरावन सारी यामुन तीरावन His divine grace, Srila Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Vantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Itai Gau Premanande Hari Hari Gau Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, text number 32. Word meanings, ate, all that is described, stri, no, shruti, sorry. Right? Yeah. I need my reading glasses, these progressive lenses are a problem sometimes. Shruti, yes, shruti. Te unto you, Nripa, O Maharaj Parikshit, Veda Gita, according to the version of the Vedas, Twaya, by your majesty, Abhiprishte, being properly inquired, Cha also, Sanatane, in a matter of eternal truth, Cha verily, Ye which, by certainly, pura, before, brahmane, unto Lord Brahma, aha, said, tushtaha, being satisfied, aradita, being worshipped, bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, vasudeva, Lord Krishna. Ete shruti te, oh, ete shruti nipa veda gita, is that the way it goes? Ete shruti te nipa veda gita,
Twaya
bi prishte cha sanatane cha, Ye vai pura brahmana ahatushta, Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Ete shruti te nripa veda gita.
Ete shruti te nripa veda gita.
Twaya bhi prishte cha sanatane cha.
Twaya bhi prishte cha sanatane cha.
Ye vai pura brahmana atushta. Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Ete shruti te nripa veda gita.
Ete shruti te nripa veda gita.
Twaya bhi prishte cha sanatane cha. Ye vai pura brahmana atushta. Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Ete shrite nirpa veda gita.
Ete shrite nirpa veda gita.
Twaya bhi prishte cha sanatane cha.
Twaya bhi prishte cha sanatane cha.
Aradito Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Aradito.
Bhagavan Vasudeva.
Ente siti te nipaveda dite.
The Prabhupada's translation and purport. Translation. Your Majesty, Maharaj Pariksit, you know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. Purport. The two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage, namely either the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the higher planets of the universe, are set forth exactly according to the version of the Vedas. The Vedic versions in this connection are Yada sarve prambuchyante kama yesya hridi shrutaha ata martyo mrito bhagavatyatra brahma samashmute. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 447 and Tirchir Abhi Sambhavanti. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 6215. You notice that these verses are in different chapters of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, but Prabhupada puts them together in one translation. Those who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the Archi planets. These Vedic versions corroborate the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the latter, is the latter of the two verses, the latter is further confirmed by Shukadeva Goswami, who affirms that the truth was disclosed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, Vasudeva, to Brahma, the first authority of the Vedas. The disciplic succession holds that the Vedas were uttered by Lord Krishna to Brahma, by Brahma to Narada, and by Narada to Vyasadeva, and then by Vyasadeva to Shukadeva Goswami, and so on. So there is no difference between the versions of all the authorities. The truth is eternal, and as such there cannot be any new option about the truth. That is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by the fashionable interpretations of mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added and nothing to be subtracted, because truth is the truth. One has to accept, after all, some authority. The modern scientists are also authorities for the common man for some scientific truths. The common man follows the version of the scientist. This means that the common man follows the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe. He must accept the versions of the Vedas as they are understood by the authorized disciplic succession. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same process of understanding the Gita is stated in the fourth chapter. If one does not follow the authoritative version of the Acharyas, he will vainly search after the truth mentioned in the Vedas. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri prabhupada ki jai. This is kind of a transition section that we're in right now. Sukadeva Goswami has finished answering a question from Maharaj Pariksit. There's a little bit summing up here in this verse. A translation again. Your Majesty Maharaj Pariksit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being worshipped. So I've just answered your question, and I haven't made any of this up, even though it may have sounded that way sometimes. Some of the things I was saying were pretty far out there. But this is all from the Vedas, and it is eternal truth, not just last week or today or tomorrow. Today we have we don't even have any temporary truths practically these days. Nothing is sacred. Everything is up for grabs. Everything's being, even ordinary, you know, societal rules, basic rules of human civilization and natural, you know, the laws of nature, even those are up for debate. What do we care about nature? We'll just use DNA. We'll just mess around with DNA and change human nature and all kinds of nature, and who knows what's going to happen. You're messing around with so many things. So even what were relative truths that we could rely on, now we're starting to feel insecure because they're messing with so many things. We don't know what the repercussions might be. But Sukadeva Goswami is saying, I'm speaking eternal truth. And this eternal truth is contained, stored, treasured within the Vedic literature. That's what I'm drawing from, just according to the version of the Vedas. I'm not making it up. And then he also says that even Krishna spoke these same things to Lord Brahma, because the Lord Krishna was satisfied after being worshipped by Lord Brahma, so he revealed truth to him too. Of course, this is our way of approaching things. We rely on the Vedas. This is how Jiva Goswami begins his Tattva Sandarbhas. He's setting out to explain the philosophy of reality, really, as delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what does he do in the beginning? He establishes the pramana. How do we know? How are we going to know? How am I going to establish my arguments, support my arguments? So of course the first thing he does is discredit ordinary types of knowledge, sensual, what we get through our senses and what we get through inference, especially those two. So he rejects those. There are many subclasses of those, but these are the basic two. What we see directly and what we hypothesize on the basis of that. So he rejects those as being insufficient, inadequate for understanding the absolute truth. He says you can't do it that way. So then he makes what is for us in the West today a giant step. He says, so you have to accept the Vedas. Now of course Jiva Goswami is speaking to a particular audience who already accepts the Vedas, more or less. They may not always accept them for everything, but he's saying we're going to accept the Vedas because this is the honorable authority, worshipful, venerable authority for ages and ages and ages throughout memorable and immemorial history. So why should we reject them now? That's going to be our authority. And of course from there he explains why ultimately he leads up to Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate authority. So that's what he speaks from. Now here Prabhupada is quoting from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which seems to be quite popular Upanishad, quoted by our acharyas. I wanted to read Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's commentary on this verse. It's short, because it ties into these verses that Prabhupada quoted and how Prabhupada translated them, which is a little interesting. One thing Prabhupada relied on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur a lot. You can see if you study Prabhupada's purports along with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you can see that a lot of times he's drawing from them. So often I'll find, especially when Prabhupada is quoting from some verse from the Upanishads, generally it comes from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Jiva Goswami. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse. These are the paths to Brahman. So we've been hearing two paths. The first path is direct liberation. This is described in verse 21 with the words Nirbidya Murtam Vishrijet Param Gataha. Maybe I should read verse 21. So he says, when I was speaking, this was meant to indicate the direct path back to Godhead. Thereafter, the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows, and then, blocking the seven outlets of the life air, he should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. What is the word here? Akunta. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. So this isn't what we would generally think of as the direct path, but this is a direct path for the yogi. It goes directly from the top of the skull back to Vaikuntha. The Vishwanath says after that, the second path is gradual liberation, which was described starting with verse 22. So we've been hearing about the step-by-step different planets, Shishumar, Chakra, and all those things. These paths are described in the Vedas, not observed by me. He's of course paraphrasing Sukadeva Goswami. He said, I'm telling you this not necessarily because I have direct experience of it, but the Vedas are saying it, so I'm repeating it. Then he quotes these verses, the same verses that Prabhupada quoted, but he separates them. Yada sarve prabhuchyante kama yesya hridistaha atha martyo mrito bhavatyatra brahma samashnute. When one is free from all desires situated in the heart, then one becomes immortal and attains Brahman. So this is meant to describe the first, saying there are two verses in different chapters of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And the first one describes a direct path. If you have a heart free from all desires, then you can take that direct route back to Godhead. And then he quotes this other, he says, gradual liberation is described also in the Vedas, with the section starting with Ter Chir Abhi Sambhavanti, which means they reach the sun planet, probably called it the Archi planets. That's also from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So that's part of the path. We're hearing part of the path. So part of it is to go through that, through the sun planet or near the sun planet in that area. And then he finishes the purport, or his commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Parikshit previously asked what a person who is dying should do. This answers the question. Seems like we've gotten quite a few different answers at different points. So this is another one. You need to go back to Godhead. You need to prepare yourself. One way or the other, you need to go back to Godhead. Those who take the slower path, they're called krama muktas. So krama means step, generally. Mukta, of course, mukta means a liberated person. So a person who gets liberated step by step. So as I was reading this about step by step, I thought, well, we have steps too. We don't just blast out of our skull and go back to Godhead, but we have steps, and they're big steps. Urukrama, they're big steps we have to take. We have this, Prabhupada quotes this, of course, famous verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ado Shraddha Tatu Sadhu Sangha. Actually, maybe I'll read it just because, why not? Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha Ota Bhajana Kriya. Actually, I know this. I'm just pretending that I don't know it. Boy, I'm reading it here. Actually, what is happening is I keep forgetting every time I try to quote a word. Tato narta nivritti sya tato nishta ruchis tata ata saktis tato bhavas tata prema abhyudan chiti sadhakana mayam premna pradur bhavi bhavetrama. This is in the purport to the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 10. This is the this verse is Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha Mammaya Mamupashita. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they attained transcendental love for me. So this isn't talking about going back to Godhead exactly, it's talking about Krishna Prema. Puta Madbhavam Agataha. Madbhavam, Prabhupada translates it as transcendental love for me. So this is about attaining Prema. That's our goal, actually, that's what we want. In fact, to go to Krishna, you need to have prema. Otherwise, you don't belong there. So let me read the translation. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. Now that's, of course, the Prabhupada translates the word shraddha here. It means you have to have some desire. Yes, I want to take up Krishna consciousness. Ado shraddha. I have a little faith in what these people are saying, what these books are saying, in this path. I have some faith in this path. That I was just mentioning recently in the Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadambani, he says that this is the Bhakti Lata Bija, when you have some faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. So then you begin to take it up with some determination. So continuing, he says, so after this initial preliminary desire for self-realization, this will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. Of course, that's bhajana kriya, which we generally refer to as sadhana, which is, again, a legitimate word, of course, used by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We have the sadhana and the sadhya, what we're trying to attain. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachments. So that's anartha nivritti. That's the long stage. From bhajana kriya through anartha nivritti up to nishta, attains steadiness in self-realization. Nishta acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead, ruchi. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, asakti, which is matured in bhava. Actually, this asakti has two stages. One is attachment to devotional service, and another is attachment specifically to Krishna. That's the higher level. It's like first you're really attached because you're just getting so much joy from your service. But then you become, you might say, more and more focused on Krishna himself. You just go crazy over Krishna. You really start falling in love with him. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. So bhava is really prema too. It's just, you can say it's an earlier stage. And by the time one gets there, the way Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur described it in his Madhurya Kadambani, is basically the person becomes a madman. We don't see examples of the way he portrays it in his book because, of course, our modern acharyas were on a very elevated stage, but they didn't act that way. They came down to the madhyam stage to preach Krishna consciousness. But those who are uttama adhikaris in certain, at least in a culture where it's, you know, allowable, you might say, in some sense, they just more or less lose their minds by the bhava stage. They don't even know they have a body. He describes it like that. They're so unaware, they're so absorbed in that higher plane of Krishna consciousness. They don't even know if they die. They're so absorbed. They're not on that plane at all. So the body can go or come or whatever. That doesn't mean anything to them. So that's the bhava stage. Now these different stages, there's a book I was reading that has this all charted out, Madhurya Kadambani. And we have different kinds of, this Madhurya Kadambani is very scientific. It's a very nice book, actually, how one progresses in spiritual life. So one thing is it breaks down lots of things into categories. So it talks about different categories of anarthas. Now, I haven't memorized these, so I can't really say, but. So there are, for example, I know the first two have, the anarthas that you get from papa and punya, from pious activities and from sinful activities. And then there are offenses that you get from, I think, different kinds, by seva, maybe, and there are, of course, there are offenses to the sadhu and offenses to the holy name. So some of these are worse than others. So the earlier ones, you can say, they get rid of more quickly. You can get rid of those more quickly just by your bhajana kriya. By the time you get to nishta, these earlier kinds of anarthas, they're taken care of. They're more or less. Now, actually, he also talks about different stages, slightly removed and, you know, more removed and that. And then you get, there's something like, the highest one is completely removed, but then there's one above that that's called absolutely removed. Absolutely removed. So not all of them are absolutely removed until you get to prema. Even in the bhava stage, you can still be suffering from the results of aparadha, especially. Now these are the ones, the earlier ones I was saying, the reactions that you're living through or the contaminations in your heart as a result of papa and punya, you can get rid of those fairly early. But getting rid of the nam aparadha or Vaishnava aparadha, you can might even say like the stain of those, or the residual result of those, they don't come away until you're in prema. And you don't get to prema until you actually leave this body. At least that's the way he described it there. When you meet Krishna, that's it. When you meet Krishna. Which, whether you're in this world or somewhere else, is, like I was explaining to the person in Bhava, it really doesn't matter whether you're back to Godhead or back to Alachua, whatever. If you're on that stage and you're meeting Krishna, you've met Krishna, you finally made it to Krishna, then all these anarthas are absolutely taken care of. So this is our krama. This is our step by step. We look at the yogi and we think, boy, it seems like it's really tough going through all of that. And of course, the yogi has all these attractions. There's always the danger for the yogi that he'll want to stay in one place. Yeah, well, this is pretty nice. I'll just stay here. Why should I keep going? All this work. Of course, it's not a lot of work when you're an accomplished yogi. But still, they might get distracted. And distracted by, you know, just like yogis get distracted by mystic cities. You can create your own planet. That's kind of cool. Maybe I'll do that for a while. So, you know, then some days you think, yeah, it's difficult. But it's not that our process is not difficult either. I'm always hesitant to bring this point up, but it's something that I think about a lot. It seems to me that we take going back to Godhead a little too lightly. Now, of course, there's some reason that we think that way. It seems like Prabhupada really encouraged us, and he kind of made it think like, yeah, you can do it. Well, you can do it, but most people don't do it. Most people don't do it in one lifetime. It takes some time. You actually have to, I think we're all looking for loopholes, because there are certain stories you read, oh, this happened, and the person went back to Godhead. So we think, oh, it's going to happen to me. I just need to have, you know, if Prabhupada's chanting in a tape, you know, then that's it. I'm going back to Godhead. But we actually have prema. Actually, I'll read this. This is kind of hammers it in a little bit. This is from Prabhupada. And you may have heard this before, but this is from the Nectar of Devotion. So obviously this is from Bhakti Goswami to Sindhu. Prabhupada says, once you learn how to cry for the Lord, once you learn this small technique, and you should be very eager and actually cry to become engaged in some particular type of service. This is called lolium. And such tears are the price for the highest perfection. If one develops this lolium, or excessive eagerness for meeting and serving the Lord in a particular way, that is the price to enter into the kingdom of God. That is the price for entering into the kingdom of God. So it's not a mechanical thing. I chant 16 rounds, follow regular principles, and I'm going to go back to Godhead. Now when Prabhupada said that, because I think about this a lot, well, one thing, I'll throw this in there. You may have heard this. I don't remember exactly. I think I read it because it's from in Jamuna, the book that Dinatarani wrote about Jamuna Devi, that she said, I've heard it also from other devotees, that she said at some point to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you told us this was going to be easy, but it's not easy. And he said, yes, I tricked you. So this principle is actually there. Of course, Prabhupada talks about it in the story of when Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, they leave, when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari leave with Vidura, then the next morning, Sanjaya is there and he's lamenting. They've left him in the middle of the night. And of course, he's their faithful servant and he's lamenting. And he says, I've been cheated by these great souls. So in that purport, Prabhupada talks about how sometimes the spiritual master, the acharya, may do some tricks. So I often think that Prabhupada, he was encouraging us a lot because, you know, think about what Prabhupada was coming to. If you think about, you know, who we were compared to who he was and what he was coming from. A bunch of, you know, rejected rejects were just nothing. We had no qualification. We don't even know how bad off we were, probably. How despicable. Now, not everyone, but at least I was. So Prabhupada's coming and he's thinking, well, how am I going to, we know his prayer coming to America. These people are just all mutas. How am I going to convince them about Krishna consciousness? So I have to come up with something. I can't discourage them because they're just passionate, you know, the modes of passion and ignorance, and they'll just give up. So I'll just tell them, just do one life, just dedicate one lifetime, all right? Just relax, just one lifetime, you can go back to Godhead. So he did, you know, he was encouraging us like that. But he also said, every moment should be Krishna conscious. Don't waste a single moment. How many times did Prabhupada say that? Over, he said it so many times. Be serious and sincere, don't waste a single moment. So it is possible. I think sometimes, you know, we see some devotees that we admire and we think, I think this person just does everything right. Somebody makes in the morning announcements, either, that, you know, you should do this today. This is this particular day, and on this day, you know, people do this. And so there's some devotee thinking, yeah, I'm going to do that today, you know. Or whatever it is. They always make the right decisions. So I tend to think that you do it in one lifetime, your budget really has to be airtight. You really have to do it right. You have to perform your bhajana without any... There's also, you know, what is it called? Nishta and anishta bhajan. Your bhajan can be flip-floppy and, you know, full of holes. Or you can have really tight bhajan. So you need really tight bhajan in order to get to artha nivritti, to get rid of those anarthas. And then you get to nishta. Now, when you read about nishta, too, you think, wow, this is really nice. Nishtam, nitya, what is it? Nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yuktimashu, okay, bhakti bhavati naishtiki. So that's the stage of nishta. So sadara jastamo bhava. Then all the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion are there. You become situated in goodness. And I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, we're talking about shuddha sattva here. Already in the nishta stage. So that's when things really get rolling. It's like you're that, who's a guy pushing a rock up the hill, Sisyphus or something? It's like, sodden a buck, it's like you're pushing this boulder up the hill. But then you get on the other side, it's like, woo, going down the other side, joyride. So when you get to Nishta, then things really start rolling. You know? Like the example that Prabhupada gives, he says it's like fire and gunpowder. Boom, 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 every street. Everything starts exploding. So, but, you know, to break through that, to get there, you have to be very, very serious. So, anyway, that's my point for today. We can't be, you know, just take it, like, oh, it's not a big deal, I just have to chant. Like Prabhupada said, I just have to chant my 16 rounds, somehow or other get them done, and, you know, keep following the way with the principles, and Krishna's going to come and save me. So, or Prabhupada, but we have, but that's not, you know, you have to read all of Prabhupada's books, not just hang your hat on one thing that he said. Of course, we don't want to be discouraged, but at the same time, we can't be lazy either. And there are so many times that Prabhupada showed that. Like, there's this one little example that always stuck in my mind. It's from one of the memories tapes. I think it's Nanda Kumar. Nanda Kumar is telling it. He had been Prabhupada's servant, and then he came back. He went to Mayapur, and he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada gave him some new service to do. So he was kind of enlivened, and he left Prabhupada's room in Mayapur. When he got to the top of the stairs, an old friend of him, Devananda Swami, was arriving. So they met and they were just chatting for a second up there at the top of the stairs, catching up a little bit. And Prabhupada sent whoever his servant was at that time, sent him outside. And his servant came outside and said, Prabhupada wants you to stop talking. He gave you some service to do. It's time for you to get to work. So you think, wow, he can't even talk to anybody? But it just, you know, you get the idea that Prabhupada was very serious. Prabhupada was extremely serious. And another thought I have a lot of times is we all have our picture of Prabhupada, right? Of course, we all have our picture of everything. We all have our own mental image of things and the way we look at things. So we all have our Prabhupada, too. So for some people, Prabhupada is just mercy, 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 whatever. It doesn't matter what we'll do. He's just going to come and grab us by the shika and drag us out of here or whatever. But then there's the other side where Prabhupada is very stern and he would get angry. You know, Jamuna Devi, she loved Prabhupada so much. But when Prabhupada was angry, she couldn't handle it. She would go hide in a corner somewhere. It was just too much. I mean, it was devastating. It was like the whole world was going to end when Prabhupada was angry. So he sometimes showed that side too. And there were things that, at least from our perspective, they tend to irritate him. And that was one of the things, that we didn't take things seriously. And there were so many areas where we fell short. Sometimes I think, oh, if we really had to do things, like there's a purport in the, I'm rambling on here, thinking of things. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura, in his purport, in his commentary, he talks about how to make an offering of bhoga to the deity. It takes like a whole page. You touch this, and you put a little drop here, then you say this mantra, then you go to the other one, and you do this, then you do this mudra, and you do... on and on and on and on and on. I said, boy, take you half an hour just to make the offering. Amazing. So this is what pujaris used to do. And this was, of course, that wasn't that long ago. That's like Prabhupada said, if I gave you all the rules, you'd faint, right? So there's so many things that we can't do. So he would think, I'm just asking you to do a little, you know, do some service, chant Hare Krishna, but be engaged in Krishna's service. That's what I want. And preach, of course, preach. Spread this Krishna consciousness movement. He told Brahmananda right in very early days in one letter, he said, you should never be without ISKCON thought, he said. He didn't say, don't be without Krishna thought, be without ISKCON, because he wanted the movement spread. So these things that Prabhupada gave us, he would always say, you had no time. It's like that was his boob and those devoted to Chad. This came up other times too. Prabhupada was in his room, he was here, his servant talking with someone outside. He said, I heard you out there just wasting time talking. So he was, he was trying to show us how important it is. So anyway, my point here was, we have our steps too, and we have to take them seriously, because we're meant to progress. Because again, why would you go to Krishna if you don't have prema for Krishna? You don't belong there. You read about the Brijbasis, what they're like. They don't think of anything else. They're practically are Krishna. They're practically absorbed in Krishna because they don't think of anything else. There's no thought of doing something else. It's all Krishna, all the time. Sometimes I think, well, gee, if you're somebody else, you might get a little jealous. Well, that's a problem, isn't it? If it's all about Krishna, and you want some of it to be about you, then you don't belong there. So that's what it, you know, that's what it means to have a really pure heart. It takes some time. It's not just, you know, we have this idea, Prabhupada takes his magic wand in the end, abracadabra, and then I heard someone arguing against this. Well, you know, Prabhupada can purify us. And this devotee said, he can present us to Krishna. And this devotee said, well, he's going to present Krishna an offering. It's all dirty, like fell on the floor of the van, and you know, you're going to offer it to Krishna. So that's us. Krishna's going to offer, Prabhupada's going to offer us to Krishna like that. No, Krishna, he's preparing us for Krishna. That's his job. That's the guru's job, to prepare us for Krishna. So we're in that school, so we have to do it. So I just ruined everyone's day, but I'll stop here. So any questions or comments? Ruined your life probably more than your day.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. I have two questions, actually. One is from the translation. Veda, there's no shape or form mentioned in the Vedas like Krishna or Rama or anything. They said, you know, God has eyes everywhere, he can run faster and all that in the Vedas and all. But we don't have a like Krishna or Ram or, you know, formed way of God in Vedas. Number two question.
Actually, first of all, you have to, it depends how you read the Vedas. I've been reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur a lot, and he likes to quote this verse, which I don't know, but it begins Shamach Chamalam something. Yeah, so what's the translation? Right, to get the mercy of Krishna, you need Radha's mercy. So the word is Shama. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he doesn't mince anywhere. He says, this is talking about Krishna. This is in the Upanishads, and this Shama is Krishna. Everyone knows. You know, in Sanskrit interpretation, you're supposed to first take the direct meaning. So what do we hear if we hear, what do we think if we hear Shama? We think Radha Shama. So he's saying, this Shyam, this is Krishna. Don't think it's just talking about black or whatever. This is Shyam. So Krishna is there, but he's hiding. You know, he's sneaky, so he hides sometimes. So he's definitely there. And why does he hide? Because he doesn't want everybody to see him, because some people don't deserve to see him. Now you have to have the qualification or the blessings of the sadhu. Then you can see. That's how you can see, actually that's how we can see Krishna in that verse, because of the blessings of the pure devotee. They're giving us the vision to see. That's, of course, Krishna's mercy coming through them. So it's there, but a little hard to find. And Krishna's form also, we have the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. You know, there are major Upanishads and lesser Upanishads. So Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Krishna's form is there exactly. Talks about how he's standing, what color he is, the cowherd boys, calves. There are also verses in the Vedas that talk about the Lord and his cows. So who's that? Maybe his name isn't there, but we know who God and his cows are. So there are, you know, hints are also there here and there. So.
But Upanishad were written way after Vedas, and even Gita is also Gita Upanishad, right? So I'm talking about specifically in the Vedas, there is no mention of Krishna or shape form of the God in Vedas. I know there's so many Upanishads, but they were...
But Upanishads are the part of the Vedas. Yes. You may be talking only about the Samhitas or something, but they're, you know, they're, the Upanishads are part of the original Vedas. But in the Rig Veda also, I think that one about the cows was in the Rig Veda I was just reading. So it's there, but you know, you have to know how to see it. Shyam, well, Shyam is there. Another way, the other thing is Krishna, well, I love this, there's one phrase that Prabhupada uses, I don't know if I can complete it, but Krishna reserves the right of not exposing himself, not to those who are basically unqualified, but he uses a harsher word, I forget what it is. So he doesn't have to reveal himself. Even in this world, famous person, they don't need to let anybody, you know, they don't need to give their audience to anyone. So even in the Vedas, Krishna is giving his audience. But he doesn't need to do that for everyone. So if he wants to stay hidden in the Vedas, that's his option. Actually, even Brahma Samhita says you can't, you know. Hard to get bhakti through the Vedas. You get it from the sadhus. So that's also Krishna, he makes the arrangement. He makes the program. You have to get with Krishna's program, not invent your own. So he sets things up in a certain way. Ultimately, he gives power of attorney to his devotees. Ultimately, if you don't get the devotee's blessing, the sadhu, you don't get anything. You don't get anywhere. So you can study the Vedas for a million lifetimes, but you're not going to get anything. You won't even get a glimpse of the rays from Krishna's toenails after millions of lifetimes, unless you get blessed by the sadhu, by the pure devotee.
I have another question. So if you don't get the prema, that means you're not going back to Godhead?
That's the general rule, yes. That's the general rule. You don't belong there. Why should you be there? You're not going to be happy there. That's why you're here. You're not happy. If you wanted to go there, you'd go there. You'd be there, actually. Actually, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, there's no love in this world. There's no prema in this world. Because there's no possible way to exist in this world with prema. You have to be with Krishna. Of course, you know, you're there or not at the same time. But that, you know, he's presenting that mood. You can't live without Krishna. That's what you have to be at. That's the price. Tatraloyam api mulamekalam. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. That's Krishna consciousness in a phrase. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. Kriyatam yadikato palabhyate. Tatraloyam api mulamekalam. Janma koti sukrite na labhyate. And you don't get it from ordinary sukriti by planting trees or whatever, being a nice charitable person. You get it only by wanting it. That's what it gets down to. My high school coach used to say, you guys want to win this, you got to have the want to. So we got to have the want to. If we want Krishna's lotus feet, we got to have the want to. But you have to cry, as Prabhupada's saying. Actually, I was just reading in the Manasiksha that Urmila published a couple of years ago. She gave one class on it here. So one of the last prayers in there, Manasiksha, it's only 11 verses and a summary verse. So it says there, you have to go before, of course, this is our sampradaya. There, we were being encouraged to become manjaris. So it says, you go, you pray to, you cry to Radharani. Please, Radharani, accept me, please. And you don't just cry for a little bit, you do it over and over and over and over. Of course, that's what chanting is supposed to be, right? We're crying to Krishna. Just accept me. Krishna, just accept me. I have no qualifications. And of course, there has to be dainya too. This came up a lot when I was reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Dainya means utter humility. That's the price also. You have to be, I don't have anything. Krishna, what can I do? I just can only ask you, Krishna Radha. That's really what it takes. It doesn't take, punching your key card, your card every day, your employer card, coming to work every day. And no, it's not just putting in the time. Of course, we have to put in the time. But the heart has to be there. Purification. The Lord in the heart was the next, I think the next chapter, right? It's called Devotional Service, the Lord of the Purity. Oh, something about the heart. Maybe they changed it. Anyway, purification of the heart.
I thought that's what Guru does, I don't have a qualification, I don't have a Krishna prema, so Guru will take us there.
I didn't hear the question.
I'm saying if I don't develop the Krishna prema and I'm doing my services, and that's what I thought, Krishna, a Guru will do it for us.
But you have to get it, actually. You can't be, If you're actually sincere and wanting it, then you'll get it. Maybe that's the point. Not just a little bit sincere, but wholeheartedly. Your whole heart. It can't be half-hearted. It has to be wholehearted. And more, if your heart is shriveled up like mine is, you have to expand it, then fill it up. It has to be completely full and overflowing, actually. Like Prabhupada. When Prabhupada would speak, I love this story of Prabhupada at New Vrindavan one year. I don't know if Pushkar, you were there when they were reading the Krishna book late at night on Janmashtami. So they were going on and on and on, and everyone was falling over. The way I heard it described, all the sannyasis, they were the dandas, and it looked like bamboo forest moving in the wind because everyone was nodding out. So, but Prabhupada was wide awake and just soaking, drinking it in. Finally he said, I think you were tired, and we can stop. Something, right? Yeah. It was probably really hot. Everyone's falling asleep, but Prabhupada wasn't. Prabhupada was getting immortal nectar. So, you know, he's trying to lead us to that. So it takes some. The point is, it takes some effort on our part and surrender. Ultimately, we have to take shelter of Krishna. I've been thinking of this phrase: "Take shelter." What does it mean to take shelter? It means, well, you know, we're suffering in this material world, and we have to turn no other place. I love this example of the chatak bird. You know, the chatak bird. The chatak bird drinks only water that comes out of the clouds. So it's probably a poetic device, but in any case, whether it's true or not. But the idea is, that bird's not going to go down to the ground and drink the water on the ground, in the lake or the pond. It's only going to get the water that comes out, no matter how long it takes. Maybe it's the clear skies for days. It's waiting for that cloud to come and give it. And when the cloud comes, then there's thunder and lightning. So, you know, Ashlisha, Ba, Pararitam, Pinashtumam. That's how the bird feels. I have to get, there's no other place where I'm going to get shelter, where I'm going to get my water, except from the mercy drops coming from Krishna. So that, you know, that's what it means to take shelter. I'm not taking shelter anywhere else. Gajendra ultimately came to that conclusion. Well, I'm not going to win any other way. I better ask God to help me. So that's what we have to do. Krishna is my only shelter. Is that what the Vallabhacharya, they say, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. Krishna is my shelter.
As far as, you know, many times I would say, like in LA, he said, okay, so, chant 16 rounds, we'll all go back to Godhead, right? So, yeah. I'm thinking of this lecture he gave in, might have been 76, on Pallad. So then he commented and said, so it's not that, oh, I'm like Pallad Maharaj. No, it may take you millions of lifetimes. Mm. So sometimes he would take the edge off of that. You know, they always give a balance. You could find different opposite things.
And the devotee's mood is also, Prabhupada said, I have no hope for deliverance for the coming crores of births. And the other thing I was thinking is that if I hear that it's going to take more than one lifetime and I get discouraged, well, that shows I'm not, you know, I'm not ready. We need to be more like Mukunda Dutt in Chaitanya Leela. Oh, I'll be able to see Lord Chaitanya again, maybe in millions of lifetimes. He starts dancing. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, people are always dancing. It's so funny. I always think, what an interesting culture. We might say, oh, Hari Bol, but they start dancing. So they start, he's thinking, oh, I only have to wait millions of lifetimes. So that should actually be, that you might say is part of the price for going back to God in one lifetime, that I'm willing to wait millions of lifetimes because I know how valuable it is. I'm willing to wait millions of lifetimes. Not if it's going to take more than one, forget it. I'm going to go join some other movement. Promises it in one. No. You can become God in 6 months, Prabhupada used to criticize this. I'll go join those guys. Only takes 6 months. No, it may take like... I was trying to find exact quotes by Prabhupada on this, but I was having a hard time, but I went on the internet, and I happened to come to one site by Gaura Govinda Maharaj, and one of his disciples said, my Guru Maharaj told me it was going to take 20 lifetimes. I said, 20? That's not too bad. Compared to crores. No, about his disciple. He told his disciple that. It's going to take you 20 lifetimes, he told me. I think it was a her.
So is it like an intensity? Intensity.
Intensity, yeah.
A million life versus it became like a, within
serious
a moment.
Serious and sincere. Now the other thing is, I mean, now this is maybe a cop-out on my part, But people are in different stages, obviously. I think we can see that in our movement. You just look around, I can see God brothers and God sisters. And, you know, some devotees, you think, I don't think this devotee just started in this lifetime. They advance so quickly and they've been so determined. So, you know, these qualities, they come with some practice. You know, anything you do, you get better with practice. So we practice over lifetimes too, so it becomes easier. I know some people criticize, they say, oh, it's easier for this person, you know, it's hard for me. Well, maybe they practiced already in some former lifetime. So you know, that there's that side of it too. Maybe it is harder for you, but of course that means you have to try harder.
Isn't what Tamal Krishna Maharaj opposed for Guru Govinda Maharaj as sannyas? And Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, well, your judging of qualification, he already finished that last life. So I was like, okay, he's qualified because he just came 6 months. Now he's going to take sannyas. So Prabhupada said, he already finished what you're looking for. Hmm. So it's very interesting. I was thinking you brought this Chaitanya Bhagavata about Pancharatri, or did he worship, just to offer requires like so many details.
Yeah.
But the other side also, because I was doing studying on Chaitanya Bhagavata, Mahaprabhu told to Gadadhar Pandit that I cannot do any more offering Pancharatri way. Because every time I try to offer, I cry so much, tears comes. So like if when you get Prem Bhakti, you will not be able to do either.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, you know, this Pancharatri Vidhi. But it just shows, we think a lot, or at least I think about traditional Vaishnav culture and Brahminical culture. They're very strict and they're very engaged, you know. Just like it was a standard thing, really, to do Nirjala Ekadashi and stay up all night. You know, when Krishna and the Brajvasis, when they went to Ambikavata, I think it was Ambika Kulna, for that festival, when they got there, then they fasted. They fasted and stayed up all night long, because that was a tradition in visiting a holy place. And that's why that, and they stayed awake the rest of the day. This is indicated, I think, in Gopal Champu is where I read this. Because we realize, we may have, you know, I've never stayed up all night. I can't even imagine it. But the devotees do, generally, you know, maybe after breakfast, they'll take a nap. But the Brajvasis stayed up during the day, and that's why they were sleeping really soundly at night, because they were really out, really tired. So when the snake was swallowing Ananda Maharaj, then, you know, they had to do a lot of yelling to wake up Krishna, I guess. Actually, Krishna was sleeping a little off with his friends, probably goofing off at night, you know, kids do at night when they go camping. So so anyway, I was thinking, well, this is a culture. You still see today in Brijbasi, these villagers will come through in the middle of the night, all night long, on these festival days. They're staying up all night long and chanting and singing. And I think this is their culture, you know. That's why I think, well, Prabhupada's coming here, and, you know, what do we do all night long? We don't want to mention it, you know. We used to, I'll just throw this in, it's kind of funny. We used to build the Rath Yatra carts in San Francisco in one part of town, and we had to bring them to Golden Gate Park. So in the middle of the night, we used to tow them with car. We really would put a car in the front and a car in the back, like a brake car. It was really dangerous, actually, because San Francisco's all hills. So we'd go over these hills pulling these carts. And as we'd start at midnight or something when there weren't any cars around. So these drunks would come out of the bars at 12 o'clock, midnight, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. Hey, whoa, look at that. That's what they're doing in the middle of the night. That's the culture that we come from. What people are doing at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're definitely not up, you know, doing their puja and their chanting their whatever, chanting their rounds. So that's what Prabhupada was coming to. So you think, yeah, he told a little, you know, little artavad, it's called. It's there in the Vedas, artavad. It kind of means exaggeration to get you to do it. Yetavaisa jirochanam. There's also this phrase, it's like you're giving a lozenge to a child to take the sweet, to take the medicine. So Prabhupada had to sweeten it up and encourage us. Otherwise, we would all go away. So we, because of his mercy, he encouraged us. Why not? Right? What he had to do as the acharya, he did it. So there's nothing dishonorable about it, of course. It's the most honorable thing, dragging us back to Godhead. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.